Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
Hello, my name is Samit Kadakia. I'm a joint degree student here at the School of Forestry and the School of Management. And this is a short podcast that will chronicle the Bright Lights Green Sites speaker series. The Bright Lights Green Sites speaker series is being hosted by CBAE as a part of their Sabin Environmental Entrepreneurship speaker series this year. And the purpose is really to focus on bringing in diverse environmental leaders, diverse voices to Yale's campus to engage with students and to be able to share their stories. So with me today, I have Yael Aflalo, who is the CEO and founder at Reformation, a sustainable fashion brand based out of Los Angeles, as well as Professor Paul Anastas, the director for the Center of Green Engineering and Green Chemistry here at Yale. So just first of all, thank you both for coming here and taking part in the series. Yael, why don't we start by just having you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your story.
Hi, thanks for having me. So Reformation is a sustainable fashion brand. We're based in Los Angeles. We have our own factory where we manufacture our products using renewable energy and a bunch of other super cool sustainable tricks. We also use sustainable materials. We purchase materials that are sustainable. We use vintage garments, and then we also use dead stock materials. We have three stores and an online store.
So the purpose of this podcast is to have a short discussion between Paul and Yael so that our listeners here can get a sense of, you know, what's happening in sustainable fashion and what's innovative in the field. So really, let's, you know, why don't we start by diving deeper into what you guys at the Reformation are doing in particular to be on the cutting edge of sustainability.
Cool. I don't think that we're doing anything that cutting edge. So I think we're still a bit small. So what we do is we try to adopt whatever practices we can that are right for our size. We have some things on the horizon that we want to work towards. So next year, two of our biggest initiatives, one is working on creating a sustainable viscose fiber. So a viscose fiber that performs better than viscose. And then our second thing is to work on dyes, printing, and washing techniques because I think there's a lot of room for improvement there. And then the third thing that we're doing, which isn't innovative at all, but I think is necessary for educating people, is garment care, which is, you know, 70% of the impact of a garment is after you take it home. And I think that has a lot of opportunity for consumers to do a lot of good and feel good about it just through some education.
So one of the reasons why I get so excited when I hear what Yael and Reformation are doing is really for the same reasons that I'm excited about sustainability generally. And that is because there's a way of thinking differently. Mm-hmm. It's looking at the things of our daily life, whether it's the clothes we wear or the food we eat or the way that we go from place to place, and thinking and considering the consequences and the impact of those things. And once you start thinking differently, once you have that new level of awareness, then all of a sudden you can start designing differently. And when you start designing differently, that is always going to be an intentional process. You can't do design by accident. You have to do it thoughtfully. And so when I look at the types of initiatives that Reformation is taking, it's a very thoughtful process. It's a very intentional process. And I just love to hear from you about when you're considering sustainability, how do you first start approaching it? How do you do it piece by piece? Do you have a great grand vision? How do you approach it?
So the great grand vision is to have a sustainable manufacturing campus in America, in Los Angeles, probably having a, you know, eventually a global network of them, and thinking about the factory as the product. So how do you create this factory that's extremely sustainable? What are the practices? What are the processes you create? And that's the grand vision. And then there's sort of these these steps along the way. So let's just say, what do we want to accomplish in 2016? So, you know, I meet with the head of sustainability at our company and we say, what can we do? Like, where is the most impact we can have? And then we kind of go through everything. So we go, okay, which product lines have the most impact? Which processes have the most impact? Kind of list them out. And then we say, all right, what are we ready to do? What do we have the resources and the bandwidth to achieve now? And are we getting there? So one of the things that we felt was garment care. So we feel that we have the audience, we have the attention of consumers. We can actually be really impactful there. And there's a lot there. And it's also, there's also about the dearth of options out there, right? So with dyes and printing and washing, there's just not a lot of options out there currently for commercially available to us. So that's something that we'll need to develop a competency internally. And it's sort of like balancing that out. I'm not going to go create something similar to Tencel because it's already in existence. So why would we, you know? So it's looking for opportunities and where we can have the biggest impact. I think from like a product line perspective, denim. So that's something that's a really big, it's difficult to accomplish. You need like a whole team that's focused on it, you know. But for us, we realized, you know, one jean is 2,000 gallons of water. So, okay, if we sold 100 jeans, how many gallons of water can we save? And can we save a billion gallons of water? Like, how can we, you know, and then it became, all right, let's start a denim brand or a denim division and call it like the billion gallon denim project. How are we going to get there? And those, you know, I'm kind of a, I like big numbers and I like big impact. So to me, that's, wow, that could be really, that could be really, really great. And so we kind of organize them and think, what can we actually achieve next year? So we think, okay, these are the four things we can achieve next year. And we'll probably get to three of them, but that's how we sort of organize our time based on resources, opportunity. Resources and opportunity.
That's really exciting. When I think about the kind of innovations that come out of this new thinking, there's this theory that transformative innovation is defined as moving toward the ideal. Mm-hmm. And the ideal is getting all of the function and performance out of something without it actually existing itself. So what does that mean? So we have all grown up with telephone wires across the street, every street that we grew up on, right? And now we all have some version of a cell phone that gets all the performance of telephone wires without the telephone wires needing to exist. So you start saying, okay, what does that mean for different products and processes? What does that mean for fashion? You know, how do you get color without dyes, scent without fragrance? And so when you let your imagination go, how do you get the fashion experience without necessarily all of the material, the embedded impact?
Mm-hmm. I think there's so much opportunity when you start to think like that. Unfortunately, I don't think there's very many people in the fashion industry with that lens. And so I think that's why we haven't seen a lot of the innovation there. Hopefully that's, you know, those types of things are top of mind for us. So, you know, the issue for us is getting to a certain scale where we could take advantage of those opportunities. And so, you know, for me, when I think about growth and why I want Reformation to be at a certain scale, a lot of it is to do that really cool shit, right? Where you get to actually change something or do something meaningful or, you know, like to me, you know, I like lasers and, you know, so being able to get to a scale where you could take advantage and also be pioneering some of those technologies.
It's so interesting because when you look at different ways of approaching sustainability, there's still a lot of folks that think that efficiency, doing things more efficiently, is moving towards sustainability. And that's good with eliminating waste and things like that. But efficiency usually helps you do the things you're doing better, but it doesn't help you to do better things. Mm-hmm. And so can you bring people in, or do you try to bring people in from outside of the fashion industry that know nothing about fashion? Maybe they're there making medicines, or maybe they're there making cars or whatever, in order to sort of break the molds and think differently, just to have these crazy conversations.
I think for us, one of the things we've had to do is pull a lot of inspiration from other industries. So how has the automotive industry attacked this? So one of my biggest companies that I look at is Tesla, right? So, you know, so building a product that's the best product. It also happens to be an electric car, like reshaping the way people think about electric cars, manufacturing domestically, reshaping the way people, the entire consumer experience, the purchasing experience. So I think I look a lot towards that. I think the food industry has done some really good stuff. I think fast casual has been able to implement a lot of sustainable practices at scale. Chipotle, some of my friends are doing a company at called Sweetgreen. And so basically what you're doing is I try to take a lot from those other industries, because unfortunately I don't really feel like there are a lot of similar mindset companies in fashion.
That sounds
hopefully
great.
It'll start to shift though.
yeah. You know, one of the things that we see at Yale is that the students get sustainability, mm-hmm. Far more than maybe even faculty. Mm-hmm. And so I'm guessing, but tell me if this is correct, I'm guessing that you're probably overwhelmed by the number of students that just want to come work for Reformation because of really your mission and how you're thinking differently and what you want to do. Is that, mm-hmm. is that right? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I can see a difference 5 years ago to today. So it's just, it's a very big difference. So there are so many more students, there are so many more people that are interested in sustainability now. We definitely get a lot of interest in that area and from students with that background, but also people that don't have a sustainability background and didn't know anything about sustainability, a typical fashion consumer, how we've been able to pivot the way they think about things. And I don't think it's been a gigantic amount of people, but I can see the change. So you can just start to see the change and, you know, you start to see, oh, one more person converted, another person converted, and they'll send emails like, we didn't know about, you know, the impact of fashion. We didn't know any of these things. Like, thank you for showing us. Thank you for explaining this to us. And I think that's really where the win is, because I'm sort of I'm a fan of mass market. I like big impact. So it's really about how do you change most people's opinions, I think.
If I can chime in here, one of the things, Yael, that I loved from your talk today was actually hearing about how you guys have managed to change the way the consumers think about sustainability and fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So do you mind discussing how
Sure.
you've actually done that? Because it's a fascinating marketing case study, I think.
So we employ different tactics. So the first tactic is, it's really a strong, it sort of was about the dissonance, right, and contradictions, and those tend to be very sticky to consumers, giving them something the thing they least expected. So the first and pivoting conception. So the first thing is sustainable fashion is perceived as granola and crunchy green, right? So what is the opposite of granola? So to me, I looked at denim industry as a benchmark. So denim had previously been a very blue collar, jeans were like a very blue collar working man, you know, mechanic look. And Calvin Klein put them on a Brooke Shields, took her top off, did some very sexy images, and lo and behold, denim is now cool. And so I was like, oh, all right, so let's use sustainable messaging and then accompany it with sexy imagery. And let's reposition the way that people think about sustainability. And that's something that we've done. So just keeping it really, really sexy as the opposite of granola. The second thing is the tone. So I think sustainability generally has a very earnest, academic and long-winded tone generally. And so what we've done is employed a very sarcastic, snappy, conversational tone, you know, and realizing that most people, like, you know, do not know what, like, they think they do, but they don't really know what greenhouse gases are, and they don't really know what offsets are and all that kind of stuff. And so using conversational language to explain to people what things are, and so taking a more educational tone, and taking more of an easy tone to understand and talking in incremental amounts. So it's very hard for people to understand a billion gallons, right? But people can understand if you take a 2 minute less shower, this is the impact over a year, and creating equivalencies. So you've saved the equivalent of, you know, a plane ride, you know, and people can really, when they have those kinds of references, they can, the numbers and the impact make sense to them.
So it's so interesting when you think about the aspects of sustainability, and one of them being social and societal, right? And the history of the fashion industry hasn't always supported female empowerment. Mm-hmm. And so when you start thinking about, here we are in 2015, and it's strong is the new sexy, fit is the new sexy, how can fashion be used in a way that actually strengthens those aspects of sustainability?
Mm-hmm. So I think for us, I didn't want Reformation to be about female empowerment. I think it's important to pick your battles. So Reformation is about sustainability and all those aspects. Part of sustainability is empowerment, giving people, educating them, making them empowered to make their own decisions. And so empowerment had always been something that was part of our DNA. And we also sell to women. And so it sort of snowballed into female empowerment as a result of those two things. And I think now we, you know, do stand for female empowerment. And it sort of kind of happened haphazardly. I think that what we do is we make it, you know, if we do present a woman in a sexy way, which is part of, you know, what our brand is, we do it in a way that it's very much her choice. So she is the strong decision maker in the process. It's not, you don't really, you know, and I'm very cautious about how we represent that in imagery. So you can very much, you know, if there's an image where I feel that she looks as if she's been put in that place, right? She's been told what to do. She seems submissive. She seems like the object. We don't use imagery like that. The female in the picture must be the subject. I think that there's a lot of things that we need to do to improve there, with like body types and stuff like that. And I think the fashion industry can do a lot there. I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, the fashion industry for the most part is mostly women working in it. But I think the people that end up making the decisions, I think there's still a lot of men there. And there's a lot of old traditions and a lot of the way that things are done. And I'm an optimist about the future, and I think things are going to change. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of room for improvement there.
So on your best day, mm-hmm. we all have bad days, but on your best day, what is it that you really love about fashion? What is it that makes you say, I just love working in this field?
I just love all the opportunity that fashion provides. I think that it's just a lot of white space. There's not a lot of people that are doing really innovative stuff. And so for me, I feel so much optimism about all the things that we can do. Wow, oh my God, we have to do this, or we have to do that, or there's an opportunity to change a business model in this way, or to do, you know, green dry cleaning or educate people. It just feels like there's so much to be done. And I get excited thinking about all the opportunities and what the future holds. I also get excited by seeing the progress that we've made. You know, when you set out on a mission where you're like, I'm going to change the way that people think about things. It's like a bold thing to think about. And it feels daunting. And probably when you first think it, you don't really tell people. Like, I'm going to keep this to myself. But when you start to see that, when you start to see the incremental progress there, when we see the numbers, so we count our CO2 and we count all of our water, and we also do offsets for all of that. And just seeing those numbers start to add up, you get, you know, to me, I feel accomplished.
So when we talk about innovation to students at Yale in different classes, one of the things they say is, well, where do you look for innovation opportunities? I say, look for the absurdity.
Right.
And once you find the absurdity, then that's your sweet spot. So tell me, In the fashion industry, what's some of the historical absurdity that just drove you to say, oh, that's an opportunity?
Oh, there's so many. Okay. The, you know, chasing cheap labor around the planet, i.e. globalization, in cutting something in one country and then sewing it in another, but putting the labels on in another and printing it somewhere else and boating it in and taking these, like, you know, sacrificing speed to market for margin is just so crazy to me. Because at the end of the day, you're stuck with all of this extra inventory and your margin at the end of the day is terrible. Here's like the absurdity that like Zara's probably the most successful, largest fashion company in the world, and barely anybody tries to copy their model. You're like, what is wrong with you guys? So crazy. The adoption rate on sampling is so crazy. So basically, like, the giant companies, they sample thousands and thousands of samples and only adopt 10%. And it's so ridiculous because it's not like technology R&D where it requires intense amounts of capital and, you know, the likelihood of making a pant with two legs is so low, you know. So it's just so wasteful. The lack of data in the use of decision making. So they don't really, there's not really like the creative sides of the companies and the business intelligence sides of the companies aren't fused at all in most companies. And they just don't like use information to make decisions. Sorry, I'll keep going.
So there's a lot of absurdity. So that's great to know.
Yeah, but that's a really good way of calling it innovation. Yeah, because a lot of times people will be like, oh, how'd you think about it? And I'm like, It's so silly the way people are doing it. It doesn't make any sense.
No, I think that's great. And you know, one of the questions that we got during your talk today focused around, well, for somebody with a master's education or with an MBA or with a degree in sustainability, how do you, you know, what do you do with that when you want to work in an industry like sustainable fashion? So you just mentioned a few in terms of the lack of data and the lack of connections between the business intelligence folks and the creatives. But what advice do you have for students who want to also transform this industry with you?
As entrepreneurs or as working in companies? Because I think it's different skill sets.
Let's hear both. Let's start with working in companies.
I think one of the things that's important is choosing the right company to work for. So, and making sure your motivations are aligned with their motivations. What kind of impact do you want to make? Do you want to make incremental impact at a larger company? Or do you want to make larger impacts at a smaller company? I think that's really important. Aligning yourself with a company for the right reasons. I've seen that a lot, like with MBA graduates that, you know, that are applying for jobs, like, what are your motivations? So I think being really honest about what your motivations are, you know, you always read about this kind of stuff in recruiting books and psychology books, like most times people don't really know what they want. So when you're asking them a question about, you know, what are your goals, you know, they sort of answer it the way that they think you want to hear the answer, but nobody's, you know, that's not a good idea for either party. So I think understanding your motivations and trying to align yourself with a company that has similar motivations. And I think that would be your best ticket to success. And then, you know, don't drive yourself crazy over details. I think a lot of times after having had so much education, ooh, this is a good one. This is a good one. Academia trains people to go for 100%. So 100% is the bar. So a lot of times when you get people out of especially postgraduate programs, right, they're just like, if they get a 90%, they're unhappy about it. But in the real world, like 90% is great. 85% is great because there's a lot of things that need to get done. And so you can't do things to perfection. It's a different world than academics. So for me, if you're getting 85s, 88s consistently, like you're very successful. And you have to be comfortable with that. And then for an entrepreneur, I was saying, you know, entrepreneurs have to have a certain skill set. So risk, So risk needs to be part of your personality. You have to be very comfortable with risk. You have to be very comfortable with internalizing risk and externalizing confidence. So you have to be able to do that really well. And I think being able to make decisions with only 70% of the information, 60% of the information, you know, you have to make decisions sometimes with very little information because you need to make the decision. That's also very difficult for people with MBAs because they want to make sure that they've analyzed every single detail before they make a decision. And unfortunately, I don't think that's always possible in life, especially as an entrepreneur. And then you have to be comfortable with, I'm going to make this decision and I believe that there's a 70% likelihood of success and I need to do it. You know, and so getting comfortable with failure when you probably haven't failed very much in your life, it's definitely a pivot for a lot of people's personalities.
So we know that Reformation does things very differently from the way the rest of the fashion industry does things. If you could let people know what one thing about the clothes that they're wearing, the clothes that they're buying, mm-hmm. that they're probably not aware of, what would that one thing be?
Cotton is very bad. So
even organic cotton.
Yeah, organic cotton's, I would say, worse. So.
And is that because of the water consumption?
So basically cotton's really bad. It's sort of like the corn is the equivalent, mm-hmm. like the corn or soybean. I think people start to understand what those things are doing to the environment. So cotton's sort of a very similar thing. It depletes, I mean, I guess the people that I'm speaking to know all of this, but for the minority that don't know, it depletes the soil. It's extremely water intensive. It's insecticide and pesticide intensive. I'm sure you guys know this stat better than me, but what is it? It's like 25% of the world's pesticides, insecticides, one of those nasty guys, and only 2.5% of the world's arable land. Pretty sure I butchered that stat. Maybe we can fix it later. But it's really bad, and there's this sort of greenwashing around organic cotton where everybody's like, oh, it's organic cotton. It's so good. And you're like, no, it uses more water. It's just – it doesn't even make sense. It's the opposite of a sustainable thing. And people just need to stop using it and use Tencel or linen or flax instead. Be a gigantic impact, right?
Great. Yeah no, definitely. well, that concludes this first podcast for the Bright Lights Green Sites series. Thank you very much again, Yael, and thank you, Paul, for coming here and chatting with us.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Thanks.